We've lost so much, and still, like, the idea of losing the NFL season doesn't seem real to me. And if it starts to get really close, like June, July, August, like, I'm not going to be a good person. I'm going to be a mess.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, where men of fantasy genius have realized, hey guys, we don't need real football skills to dominate on the fantasy field. So slap on your pads and grab your helmet. Shit's about to get real.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to another edition of Let's Talk Fantasy Football. I am your host, Nick Schreck, and joining me tonight, guys, from the East Coast, Vinny Gonzalez, and all the way on the West Coast, Nick Walsh. Boys, what is up?
How you doing, Schreck?
Yeah, what's up, Schreck? How we all doing on this wonderful Friday night?
I'm great, man. I'm excited. We're here to talk some fantasy football. The NFL draft is rapidly approaching, one that I expected to be delayed. But I think we'll touch on a little bit later. But, man, do we fucking need it. We need the NFL draft.
Yes, we do. I need Joe Burrow, and I need him to be on my team.
I've been, like pounding my face into NFL draft research in order to, like, just cope with everything that's happening. And just two things before we get moving. One, if you listened to our last podcast, sorry, we were too excited. We got super wasted. The first hour and a half is pretty good. The last half hour, not. And then two, everyone, I hope everyone's doing well. I think the three of us are pretty lucky to be, like, more or less, you know, more or less unaffected by this whole thing. So hope everyone out there who is a fan of LTFF is doing okay.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better, Walsh. You guys stay safe, keep social distancing, do what you got to do. You know, we are hashtag blessed so far to have been healthy, and our loved ones as well. So we wish the best to you guys, and we hope we can stay healthy for you guys. Today, guys, we're going to be talking about some news, some 2019 positional recaps, mostly about the running backs and wide receivers. We're going to talk about the top five at each position. And we'll hit the NFL draft briefly, just kind of talk about what's to come and the excitement levels there. We'll be back with another podcast, hopefully, if we get some good feedback here with QBs, tight ends. And you know, maybe we'll throw some kickers in there for fun. Why not?
But I'm not fucking doing the kicker research.
We'll let Don do the kicker research. Don, I know you're tuning in. Fucking get cracking, buddy. We'll get you ready for the kickers. Guys, let's kick it off. We really have one big news item here. It's Brandon Cooks to the Texans. The Texans are just, I don't think the phrase really fits, but wheeling and dealing so far in 2020.
They're doing a very bad job.
Because they're wheeling and dealing, but all the wheels are just falling off of the car as they continue to, like, ride away.
Like, Brandon Cooks and David Johnson, who they now are, like, the new owners of, have the worst contracts in the NFL. Are they good players? Yeah. Like, Brandon Cooks is decent, and he's done some good stuff for the teams he's been on, albeit many teams, but, you know, he just gets dealt a lot. And David Johnson's just been kind of unhealthy and has a massive running back contract, which is very unpopular in today's NFL. So, Texans are kind of not – it doesn't seem like they're doing smart things, but they have – skill position players that could get it done, but right now everyone is just ripping on them and they look very dumb.
Yeah, I mean they're fucking stupid as shit for, like, the things that it's doing. And here's the thing, like, year one or whatever, like, it might work out, like, it might go come out there where, like, they have a dynamic offense and all this shit. Like, I think for fantasy, like, Brandon Cooks might be a legitimate weapon this year, because we know he has his injury history, particularly with the concussions. We know the contract is bad, but that doesn't matter for fantasy. But, like, Will Fuller gets hurt a lot. Kenny Stills, they didn't seem to want to use as a deep threat last year, even though he is a deep threat. So, like, Brandon Cooks just might be the guy that Deshaun Watson, like, chooses as his guy this year. So, I mean, he's a guy, even though he had a down year this past year, like, he was being drafted as, like, a top 15 type wide receiver going into that year. So he's done it in the past, and I think theoretically he can do it again, particularly with DW4 at the fucking helm there.
And there's, like, the huge Hopkins target share that's up for, you know, grabs. So it's not like he's not going to get targets and get shit done. So it's going to be, he's going to be a big focal point of the offense, because they have two good tight ends, but, you know, like we mentioned on the last podcast, I think, hopefully, they don't use the running back a lot. So it's pretty much just going to be open for Brandon Cooks as like their main dude.
Yeah. And like Walsh said, Will Fuller is always hurt. So at some point he's going to go down and it's totally the Brandon Cooks show. So we'll have to see how things kind of fall out and if we have camps, what we see in camps and hopefully by that time things with Corona and everything else have calmed down to the point where we can actually see teams get together and see things develop a little bit. Hopefully no impact to the NFL season start. But I guess time will tell, unfortunately.
I will be the saddest man in the world. Everyone got to stay the fuck inside so the NFL can start on time. Like, please. I don't care if it looks like it's getting better. Until they tell us we can go outside, please stay the fuck inside, because if the NFL gets delayed, I've done so much research over the past couple weeks. So much of it.
We've lost so much, and still, like, the idea of losing the NFL season doesn't seem real to me. And if it starts to get really close, like June, July, August, like, I'm not going to be a good person. I'm going to be a mess.
I'll stay inside until August. Like, I will just do exactly what I'm doing until August if it means the NFL will come back on time.
Oh, I just mean, like, mentally. Like, huge NBA fans had their – like, the season's going to get canceled. You just got to brace for that. And, like, it's just – as it gets closer to the NFL season, I'm just not going to be mentally okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a it's going to be a shit show, quite frankly. A lot of people completely devastated. But I'm with Walsh, guys. You got to do it. You got to do it for not, and if not for your health, do it for Walsh. All right. If not for you and your family, do it for Walsh. We can't have Walsh go off the deep end. Without him, we are nothing. So we need to keep him happy and satisfied. So please, for Walsh and for the sake of LTFF, stay inside, stay healthy, so NFL can start on time, and Walsh can gamble. I mean, Vinny needs to gamble too. I know that's killing you right now, Vin.
I was looking at table tennis today, so I need help.
I put a DraftKings lineup on a simulated Madden game that they put on DraftKings the other day.
Good. We need something.
We're in a dangerous place. All right, guys, let's talk about some good things from the past. And let's start with the running backs from 2019, from the fantasy season there. The number one running back, Christian McCaffrey. Walsh, I'm going to throw it over to you. You kind of put together some more in-depth stats here. And with some of the shorthand, you're better equipped than I am to kick us off.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I wanted to do with, like, kind of looking at this was looking at the top five guys from each position. And just for reference, I did this with half point PPR, and it was points per game. And it was people who had at least 12 games played, I believe. So so keep that in mind. But the point of this was basically to look at how these guys got there and try and use that information to figure out what guys should be targeting in the future. So look at trends and figure that sort of thing out. So the first guy, obviously, at running back was Christian McCaffrey, who averaged 25.8 half point PPR points per game. And the motherfucker had over 100 receptions. So, like, think about that with the actual PPR points and how much more that even mattered. I think the biggest thing with Christian McCaffrey was just completely unparalleled passing game usage. And that goes, like, kind of historically. He was eighth in the league overall in targets. He had 142 targets. And he was first in running back targets by 34. So no running back was even close to him. To go along with that unparalleled passing game usage, he was second in the league in red zone rushing attempts. So not only when you look for running backs that you want to play in fantasy football, I think the biggest things you want to look for are passing game usage and touchdowns, because you can get as many carries as you want in between the 20s. And like, unless you're getting, you know, fucking 150 yards a game, it doesn't matter that much. So Christian McCaffrey was the best where it mattered in terms of the passing game usage as well as the red zone rushing attempts. And just to compound that, he was a guy who was very consistent week to week, double-digit targets in 8 weeks, only 4 weeks with five or less targets. And he only had 1 week in the entire season with single-digit fantasy points. It was against the Bucks. I think it was a weird London game, if I remember correctly.
It might have been the kind of like the death of Cam game. I think it was Thursday night, Bucks Panthers, and it was where Cam was playing on that bum ankle.
Did they had a London game though, right? I'm not like making that up.
He went nuts in that game though.
Okay. All right. Never mind. That's the one where he had like two touchdowns. All right. But yeah, I mean, McCaffrey, like only so much can be said. And just for reference, 6.8 points per game ahead of our number two and three running back tied at 19. McCaffrey had the second best fantasy season of all time, only behind 2006 LaDainian Tomlinson.
True.
He's
unreal.
There's only so much that can be said, but like this motherfucker, you know?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, again, he was drafted as a fucking elite guy, and he came in and did exactly what you paid for him to do. Arguably the number one pick, depending on where your draft board went last year. And again, you know, I think he continues to do exactly what he's always been doing. I mean, his current ADP coming off is 101 via fantasy football calculator. So I would expect that to continue. I mean, obviously we can argue about semantics on a couple top guys, but he was exactly what we thought he was last year. Some people were concerned about the usage. I am not concerned going into 2020. He stays an elite guy.
Yeah, I think the lesson learned there is that like even though like there was some coach talk saying that he wasn't necessarily going to be, you know, the every down back, they didn't have anyone behind him at any point. So going into the season, like it should have been very obvious that he was going to be on the field on every down, mm-hmm. and that he could catch passes, he could be there in the red zone, and he could do everything else. You know, I think the shitty quarterback situation might have added to that. And if you're drafting McCaffrey, don't expect the second best fantasy year of all time next year. But there's absolutely no reason for him to be anything but the 101 next year.
Vinny, feel any differently?
No. Guys nailed it. Like, it was just so impressive. Like, it was kind of just insane. You were watching him every single week just destroy people. And I was thinking about our league and how crazy it is. If you had the one or two spot, first person had quite the decision to make at the time. It was like McCaffrey or Saquon. And if you chose Saquon, like, you probably didn't have a great season. Just because he got hurt, very unfortunate. But, like, at the time, I think Saquon was kind of the 101 there. And if you had the balls, I think Don did that in our league where he just kind of pulled the trigger on McCaffrey, albeit last second, without any kind of, you know, decision-making ability. But it got done nonetheless. So if you had the balls and you took McCaffrey, way to go. Or if you saw this coming, even more so, way to go. But it was just a very interesting kind of 1-2 there. And it was sort of a
way to rub that in Walsh's face.
Yeah, I had the first pick of what pick we wanted, and I chose 102 because I assumed that Don would be taking Saquon number one because that was sort of the consensus. And I figured if he didn't, then my consolation prize was Saquon number two. That's still good. And man, that didn't quite work out for me. You know, in a season where I really could have used it, but what can you do?
Still came in third.
That's true. That is true.
Probably would have came in first now that I'm thinking about it if you had McCaffrey.
Yeah, 100 fucking percent. Are you kidding me? I would have steamrolled the entire fucking league, dude.
It's just kind of something I realized right now.
As you talk yourself through it, you're like, Walsh really had a shot, you know?
You probably could have used the number one player in fantasy.
Yeah.
I mean, against my schedule, Walsh, I don't think you stood a chance, but, you know, nothing you could do there. I was blessed.
I don't even want to talk about your team. Who was on your team, Shrek?
I don't even remember, dude. I don't think I owned anybody notable.
The consistent guy that had 110 points beating somebody that just had a bum week of like 89.
Austin Eckler, baby. That was really all I had.
That's your winner, yeah.
That was an important guy to have early in the season.
Yeah.
Should we move on to number two here, Derrick Henry?
Let's do it.
Sure.
All right. So Derrick Henry finished as the number two, again, in points per game, half PPR. But the way that he got there was obviously much different than Christian McCaffrey. He had a much lower floor week to week due to a lack of targets. He had 24 targets. Again, compare that to Christian McCaffrey, 142 targets. And Derrick Henry's 24 targets was a career high for him. But the way that he got here was he led the league in rush attempts. He He led the league in rushing yards, and he led the league in rushing touchdowns. So that's obviously huge. And I think towards the end of the year, he sort of, you know, did that more and more and more and more. But again, looking at his production over the entire year, 19 fantasy points per game, but also six of his 15 games, he had 15 or less fantasy points. So it was a situation where he wasn't entirely consistent. And again, when we're looking at consistency, we need a target floor. I think that's the biggest lesson from these sorts of players. And we'll get into this more with a couple guys coming up. But Henry, despite his, you know, huge point total, that sort of thing, just really didn't have the target floor to have a consistent week-to-week production. So I think my question for you guys is, how willing are you to draft him high, given one, Deion Lewis is going to be gone, so maybe his targets go up. They have gone up almost every year in his career. But again, I don't think a huge amount is likely. And then two, how much do you care if you're going to get those blow-up weeks that a guy like Derrick Henry really gives you? Vin, what's your opinion on this sort of thing?
Well, I actually owned him this year, and I was scared when I drafted him because I knew this was the situation going in. I'm like, this guy's going to need a lot of rush attempts, a lot of rushing yards, and a lot of touchdowns. I mean, everybody needs that, but it was more so the case with a guy like Derrick Henry who's built like this.
Thank God he led the league in all of them.
Exactly. So, like, all the fucking things fit perfectly together, and I didn't feel stupid. But at the time, like, he dropped so far in our draft. I think I took him in the fourth round, and it was kind of this thing just kind of – like, my first – well, the two backs I had – drafted Todd Gurley before him, and I was very nervous, and I needed a running back, so I had to take somebody. And it just happened to be Derrick Henry. I got super lucky that this year panned out. So, like, at the time, all the reasons that we're showing right now why he did well are kind of the same reasons why I'm very scared to draft him again. Like, he hit number one in every single category. Do you know how hard that's going to be to do again, let alone stay healthy the entire time? I understand the dude's built like fucking insanely, just runs people over all fucking season long, and as the season goes on it gets better, but it just kind of seems hard to hit in all those categories. But I'd probably take a chance on somebody else, and I'm thinking he's going to go early second, possibly leak into the first at the end, who knows. It's just I see a lot of hype with him right now, and I think the no Deion Lewis thing is probably going to help us, or not help for us who are seeking value, but it's going to boost him up in ADP and kind of make him not valuable to us in the sense that he's got to do so much well again to make his fantasy season what it was this year. So it's going to be tough to duplicate. And I really don't think I want to be along for that ride. I got lucky this time last year. So I think I'm out. I still love Derrick Henry. He's still a monster, but I can't do it again.
You fucking changed. I'm sorry, Walsh, to cut you off. I've never seen you be a guy that fucking cashes your chips in, Vin. You always fucking double down.
So yeah, normally I'd be like all over this again, but yeah, I'm walking away from the table.
The thing I was going to say is like, so there are certain players who are just complete outliers. And like the one that I'm thinking of is Tyreek Hill, where it's just like, this dude's stats make no sense at any point, but they continue to like come in as Tyreek Hill only does. Us, like, what if Derrick Henry is Tyreek Hill, and like all of us who are quote unquote smart and quote unquote, you know more about all of this and how usage leads to everything else and that sort of thing, what if it just doesn't fucking matter for him?
I did not even think about that for a second, even though he's got pretty much everything aligned with Tyreek Hill. It's like, you know, as inversely it can be from wide receiver to running back, it all matches up.
I think it depends where he falls, right? Like right now, to me, Derrick Henry is, according to Fantasy Football Calculator, full PPR, he's coming off the board 17 overall, running back 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, running back 11 at 17 overall. So I think I would fuck with that as my running back too.
That's not bad.
If he creeps to the end of the first round, I think I'm out. Because
I think you guys.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you guys nailed it where like he. Where he's like sort of. If he gets to the right value, sure. But like there's probably going to be some dumb fuck who's taking him way too high in your league. Yep. You know?
Yeah.
It's.
Also, to your point, Shrek. You said you're running back too. Like, are you really going to do double up running backs, or is that kind of something you didn't really think about? Like, do you want to go wide receiver since there's
I think it's more just that more of all kind of old philosophy in my head. I haven't really looked at the full board as a whole of if I was sitting at the top where I was going to go versus doubling up or whatever with wide receivers. But if you did go running backs again, and a PPR, again, it depends on your league scoring, right? Because PPR, you want some kind of receptions. Can Derrick Henry continue? Obviously he didn't need the receptions, but I mean, I've never been opposed to it. I've always been a guy that stacked running backs, and it has hurt me in the past by doing it. But in April, it's too early for me to say that I said that with sincerity as my running back too. But I think if he stayed in that price range, I'm okay fucking with that, for lack of a better term.
Another crazy thing from watching a lot of Derrick Henry games, just Titan games overall from owning him, was every time they targeted him, it was extremely valuable. So right. Again, that was something where, like, I was watching, I was like, it was a play fake, and I've seen this play every time I've watched like a game of theirs, and I'm just like, that's going to be a screen pass to the house. And that happened 3 or 4 times.
He would take it like 70 some odd yards.
Yeah. Or there was also like the like, it was usually like around the goal. It was like their weird, like, we have Henry and we're probably going to run it. And they just kind of scheme to a different side of the field. And he'd take it like 25 and just bust it in. It was kind of like clockwork in some of their games. And it's just like, whenever they targeted him, it was like on purpose. It was the wrong thing to do at the time on like the down count, on the yardage. So it was just like, you don't expect to pass it to him. And it was just, the Titans were very smart. And I just feel like Lightning hit too much for them last year. Like, they were just an insane team. So the Derrick Henry thing, I'm just kind of steering away from. He's a great player. I love the dude. But if you're along for this ride, it might be a little rough this year as far as things that need to go right.
Yeah, I mean, I said like the Tyreek Hill thing to play devil's advocate, but I completely agree with you in that Lightning hit way too much for the Titans last year. Ryan Tannehill is not the second most efficient quarterback in the league. AJ Brown is not the most efficient wide receiver in the league. And Derrick Henry is not, you know, going to do everything that he did last year. You can make exceptions, but the Titans, goddamn, everything hit at the right time for them last year. So
you're doubling down on Derrick Henry?
Definitely. Put it all on black, baby. Let's let it ride. All right. Should we move to number three here? We got Dalvin Cook, who was actually tied with Derrick Henry. I forget. I think it might have been like a small fractional difference that made me put Henry above Dalvin Cook. But Dalvin Cook is an interesting one because just like all the consistency things we talked about with Derrick Henry, like, none of them exist for Dalvin Cook. He only played 14 total games, and he was playing a lot lower percentage of snaps towards the end of the year due to injury. But even with those issues, he had 4.5 targets per game. That creates a very solid target floor. And every single one of his games that he played, he had between 2 and 8 targets. He only had 1 week of single-digit fantasy points. And while he didn't have the dominant snap share of a Christian McCaffrey or really the dominant rush game usage of Derrick Henry, he saw solid carry numbers, he saw solid target numbers, and he also tied for 4th in the league in red zone carries. So when it mattered, the Vikings were giving him the ball. Even though he was like somewhere like 60 to 75 or so percent of the snaps, and Alexander Mattison saw some snaps, those sorts of things, later in the year, maybe a little bit of Amir Abdullah. But yeah, Dalvin Cook really, I think, was one of the models of consistency with another guy we'll get to a little bit later. And he's a guy that I think, you know, the thing with him has always been injury risk, but if this motherfucker can stay healthy, like, you're looking at a guy that will just carry you the whole year. Shrek, what were your thoughts on Dalvin Cook?
I'm a double down on Dalvin Cook. I'm all in on Dalvin Cook. As I'm looking, I just want to note, I'm looking at Fantasy Football Calculator's ADP. I think that they just are what they are because there's not a ton of data going in there right now with drafts and such. But he's currently sitting at the 4th pick in the 2nd round.
That's fucking egregious.
So that, I agree. And that's why when I looked at what his ADP was, right. It's got to be the fact that there's just a lack of data, which is fine. It's April 10th. We're the, you know, us and other people in the industry, the only people that are really looking at these things to this extent. So I'm probably going to try and pull back from referring to that data, but I wanted to reference it because I did hit it before. And when I looked at that, it's criminal, obviously, for being the fourth pick in the second round. Like you said, Walsh, I think it's the safety net. And when he is healthy, I was, you know, looking on Pro Football Focus at some stats. And really what they noted is that he ranked third in 2019 among non-quarterback skill position players in fantasy points per game at 21.2, you know, just behind Christian McCaffrey and Michael Thomas. So despite the injuries and all the other things that he has dealt with, when he is on the field, he fucking does it. And when you only have one performance that gives you single digit fantasy points, which you're going to get from pretty much any guy at some point, I have no problem with Dalvin Cook at whatever price he commands in 2020.
I'm in full agreement with you guys. I really like – it's just the whole injury thing, which is something that we talk about around draft time. It's just like, that shit doesn't really matter. Just got to go for it. Like, is that really going to hold you back from taking somebody who could easily be the number one running back for fantasy football? It really shouldn't, because that's kind of as much as someone can be injury prone – he could also not be. Flip the switch. So everything just seems like it's going to get in line for Dalvin Cook. And I think you guys completely nailed it.
Yeah, and when you have a guy who even necessarily doesn't have the snap share of you know, McCaffrey or that kind of thing, but he's in a good offense and he's used consistently and he's used in both the passing game and the red zone. Again, those are the two things that I keep keying in on. Passing game, red zone. That's where you need your running backs to be used. He's used in both. That's the biggest thing for me. And I think that's something we can look into in terms of like other players as well, and try and figure out and project going forward. Moving on to the fourth guy in fantasy points per game, again, half PPR, we're looking at Aaron Jones, which is super wild, because he was in a split backfield for the entire year, so it made his usage very hard to predict. But here's the secret ingredient: 19 touchdowns for Aaron Jones this year. It buoyed his fantasy production big time, but it also gave him like these really wild spike weeks and these really wild down weeks. He had 5 games with 10 or less fantasy points, but then 4 games with 25 or more. And again, this is half PPR. This isn't even full PPR. And included in those 4 games were a 45 and a 38 point game, which were fueled by 3 and 4 touchdown performances. So this is one where if I was looking forward, I would kind of just not throw this in the trash, because obviously Aaron Jones is a very talented player. But I would look at it and be like, if Aaron Jones is going to split the backfield again with Jamal Williams, which it seems like he's going to, then there's no fucking way you can value him the way that he performed this year.
No, I'm with you. I do not like Aaron Jones, and that's really a product of me playing him against people that had him on spike weeks. Because I'm just like, all right, this dude's in his fucking split backfield. And we talked about it. It was enraging last season. Like, we would expect, yeah, I mean, you're playing him. He could blow up. He could not. It's just weird. And they were just involving Jamal Williams at weird times. And it was just, if you were on the good side of that, you love him. If you weren't, you hate him.
It's I mean, certain games he would have like 5 points, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then I would see that and it was like, all right, sweet. I play the guy with him this week. Please God.
And he's got 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, Jamal Williams week, please. And they're just like, all right, now it's 5 touchdowns, 230 yards, like on my face. I'm just like, sweet. I can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing of value to add. I agree, though. I mean, I think he's more a top 15 running back than finishing as the top 4 running back as he did. Obviously, touchdown regression is fucking real.
19 of them.
It has to come down.
Absurd.
Again, all good things come to an end, and unfortunately for 2020, Aaron Jones, this is where that comes to an end. It was a good ride.
All in your fucking shot, Shrek. Jesus.
Yeah, I like that. I like that bold prediction. I mean, it's not that fucking bold. It's math is on your side.
Yeah. It was also super, super dark. It's just like, yeah, it's over.
I mean, it is. Like you said, well, it's not bold, right, to call him to regress from that. And to finish as a top 15 running back is nothing to scoff at either. But from what he was to where he's going to go, it's over. I mean, it's, if he repeats, it'll be the perfect storm of Derrick Henry reincarnate for Aaron Jones.
I think it's also worth noting with Aaron Jones that a lot of his biggest passing usage weeks were weeks when Davante Adams was hurt, and the coaching staff obviously said to themselves, our best pass catcher on this team, because we have no other wide receivers, and Jimmy Graham is washed as hell despite the fact that the Bears gave him a huge-ass contract this offseason, is Aaron Jones. So like they there was a lot of like real spike pass usage as well that I do not think is going to go forward in the future.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I think should we talk about the last guy at running back?
Let's wrap it up.
All right. So our number five in half point PPR fantasy points per game was Zeke Elliott, and this was kind of a surprise to me when I was doing this research, because in my brain, I was like, Zeke had a down year. And I don't know what caused that or what, but 17.8 points per game. And he had elite usage in both the run and the pass game, 301 carries, only running back other than Derrick Henry to break 300 carries on the year. And also 71 targets, which is not Christian McCaffrey level. It's actually exactly half, I think. Yeah, exactly half of his targets. But, like, for a fucking running back, 71 targets is not bad at all. He was very consistent week to week due to his heavy usage, but he never had any really major spike weeks. One game under 10 points, and that was 7.3, and only two games over 25 points, and that was 29.5 and 25.9. Just really, really consistently good for the entire year. And maybe that's why when I saw this, I was like, wait, really? But it turns out Zeke, who we all like, you know, was the consensus number four, but then he had the holdout issue and whatever else. He really lived up to exactly what I think we all wanted him to be.
Yeah. It wasn't that sexy splash, right? Like you said, like you associate with Ezekiel Elliott, when you hear his name, you expect big numbers, big production all the time. Probably similar to a la Christian McCaffrey-esque. But like you said, Walsh, I mean, he's the model of consistency, and I think that's the same expectation you have going into 2020. His lowest number of touchdowns in the 4 years since he's been in the league has been 9, even with that suspension in 2017. He's had over 300 attempts on the ground in each of those seasons, and he would have had 4 straight if he didn't miss that time in 2017. So, you know, he is the model of consistency, particularly in that offense, even if it isn't always as sexy as you think Zeke's name should be. I think he's going to kind of stay right here in this mix as he always has been. And a top five finish is totally realistic as we move forward.
Yeah, this is, I mean, like whenever we're talking about like preseason stuff and we're doing running backs, I'm always talking about consistency and like, you should take the guy that's more reliable and someone that'll get you points every single week. This was like a case where if you got what you were looking for, which was pretty much around that like very consistent, won't disappoint you stuff, and then kind of were unhappy at the end of the season, just like, oh, maybe I didn't want that. I wanted more action. Like I needed to get something more sexy. But all Zeke did was deliver, proved to be one of the few running backs to get a big contract to get it done, was really the heart of the Cowboys, I think. As good as Dak was, like Zeke is Zeke, and they really need that dude. And he's still a very big focal point, and I hope people haven't soured on Zeke, because he's going to be – it's hard to say someone's a steal in, like, the first round. So you just got to have more balls, I think, to take Zeke a little earlier than people would. Because if he falls back in any form of ADP at all, that's just something that doesn't match what we're looking at. Because if he was this consistent, he can just as consistently improve on it. Maybe get one or, you know – one more touchdown here, a bigger play here in a game, and could just make all the difference and just be, you know, top three easily. So Zeke is probably one of the few pure running backs that I'm going to target, not only on just consistency alone, but like Zeke is just one of those freaks. And I think in years like this, you kind of forget about it, but he can easily have, you know, just multiply his touchdowns. So really looking forward to capitalizing on some Zeke slippage here in the first round, and then just kind of, you know, him bouncing back into like more having a more elite year than kind of this consistent year he had.
Yeah, and just a quick preview of our quarterback discussion on this. Zeke's quarterback may or may not have been fourth in fantasy points per game, which I also did not realize at the end of the year. And in year two under Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator, I'm pretty fucking high on the Dallas Cowboys offense. So take that for what you will. A couple honorable mentions here. Saquon Barkley, Austin Ekeler, and Mark Ingram all averaged over 15 points per game. Saquon really kind of made his hay in those last 2 weeks, where the playoff weeks where he had good matchups and it seemed like maybe he was a bit healthier and he just went nuts. In the league where I drafted McCaffrey and traded for Saquon in the middle of the year, that fucking helped me a lot, and I won a decent chunk of change on that shit. And
congratulations, Walsh.
So thank you on that. Ekeler and Ingram were both interesting as well because they had touchdown numbers over what you would expect, Ekeler in the passing game and Ingram in the running game. But again, that kind of makes sense. You're going to need guys to overperform their expected touchdown numbers for that to happen. But I think that's going to do it for our running back. So Shrek, why don't you take us away here?
Yeah, well, Walsh, I think you killed it here on the running backs and diving into that data for us. But with that, I think let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk wide receivers and NFL draft.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, home of the brutally honest fantasy advice you've always needed.
Welcome back, guys. We are back to talk wide receivers here. And once again, Walsh has dived into the numbers, the madness. And he's going to kick us off at number one overall with Michael Thomas, 18.8 points per game. Walsh, take us away, bud.
Yeah, absolutely. So we mentioned before Tyreek Hill as just like this complete outlier and you know, Derrick Henry as this potential complete outlier. Michael Thomas is a complete outlier in a completely different way. And I think both of you guys will remember back to me breaking down Michael Thomas before the 2019 season and why I was not drafting him as a top three wide receiver. And the reason was because he had an 86% catch rate in 2018. And I was like, well, there's no fucking way that he can do that again. So guess what the fuck Michael Thomas did this year? In terms of the catch rate, 80.5%. 4.5% lower than 2018, but for context, the next highest wide receiver was Kenny Stills of the Houston Texans at 72.7%, which, again, if you're doing the math, is 7.8% lower than what Michael Thomas did. So Michael Thomas, for the second straight year, has proved that he is just a catch rate monster, that he is a guy who can catch anything thrown his way, and they are all pretty short routes. But he's another guy, and in the same vein, but again, a very different vein than Tyreek Hill, that has proved himself to be a complete outlier of everything else. So let's dive into a little bit more of this. So Michael Thomas played all 16 games. He had 12 games with double-digit targets. His lowest game was 7. He had 185 total targets. And his target share on the team was 33.2%. Again, absurd. I know they signed Emmanuel Sanders. We can maybe talk about that a bit later. Don't think it's going to matter too much. 9 games this past year with 11 to 13 targets. So just very, very consistent in terms of double digits, but low double digits. He was 68th in average depth of target among wide receivers with at least 50 targets. He had 8 yards per target, which again, not very, very high. For reference, a guy we'll talk about later, Mike Evans, I believe, had 15.6. We know how much of a deep threat he is. So again, everything that Michael Thomas was getting was very close to the line of scrimmage, but he was just so fucking consistent. And the thing that kind of shows that is, despite being 68th in average depth of target, He was 18th among qualifying wide receivers in yards per target at 9.3, and he was 10th in adjusted yards per attempt at 10.2. So despite being that far down in where they're throwing the ball, he's still just making the most of it every time. You know, 9 touchdowns on the year, which for that amount of usage, if you're going to get 185 targets, you fucking better get to 9 touchdowns. And then only 2 games with single digit fantasy points. Michael Thomas was just an absolute anomaly, and this is the second year he's done it. And generally when an anomaly does it for the second year straight, I will start to believe. That hasn't gotten me in trouble with Tyreek Hill. Where it did get me in trouble with was Alvin Kamara this year, which we didn't talk about the running backs, and that's on purpose. So you never know. 2 straight years of being an anomaly does not necessarily guarantee that you are an anomaly the rest of the way. But, I mean, at this point, we got to assume that this guy is just different than everyone else, right? And Vin, what's your take on Michael Thomas?
I think Michael Thomas is the best wide receiver in the NFL right now. I feel like it's between him and Hopkins, and you can go back and forth, and I wouldn't hate you either way, but I think Michael Thomas is the best right now. Every time you see him, I feel like it's either a contested catch in close coverage with whoever's the sorry son of a bitch playing him in man, or he's sitting down in the zone at least getting 8 to 12 yards like per pop, and that keeps the Saints offense on the field. Drew Brees is going to constantly throw to him every single time. And every year, like the last – I'd say two or three years like that from the past have been like us talking about Drew Brees and when his final ride is. He's back again this year, and he's going to keep continuing to sling the ball Michael Thomas's way. It's their best shot to win. Kamara is still great, but Michael Thomas is their offense, and Drew Brees is going to continue to sling it his way. The dude is a chain mover. And like you said before, with the target share, you better get the touchdowns. He lands the touchdowns, and there's always room for improvement there with the high volume of work. So I have no problem with Michael Thomas as number one wide receiver, and I really think he's the best in the game right now.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to add. I'm all in on Michael Thomas as number one, and continuing to double, or we'll say triple down on Michael Thomas. You know, quite frankly, it's just he seems to just have a way with it and makes it happen. Kind of like you said, that sometimes you can't explain it, but he's just one of those guys. He's finished with 9 touchdowns with 3 out of his 4 career seasons. He's going to continue to be that fucking guy. He's going to get fed. I have nothing of value.
This was also a cool thing where Michael Thomas got absolutely paid and then went out and fucking was the number one wide receiver. How many times have we seen a dude get paid and it just like kind of doesn't work out for whatever reasons? But my God, dude, this guy just went nuts.
Yeah. You pay him and then you're like, wow. Yeah, he was fucking worth it.
Holy shit, he did it.
So I'm going to tease something real quick. And I've been doing some research into some stats with Pro Football Focus in terms of the rate of, or the catchable ball rate that receivers get. And I'm interested in terms of, we talked about Brees' one last ride or that sort of thing. What Michael Thomas can do without Brees, because his rate of catchable balls is also absolutely absurd, which should come as no surprise when you're getting an 80.5% catch rate. And, you know, part of that is him. Part of that is the fact that he is consistently open 8 yards down the field every play. So that's definitely has to do with his talent, but I have a little bit of research that I'm not entirely done with that I would like to, you know, kind of just tease a little bit there, but let's get into our number 2 wide receiver. And that was Chris Godwin. He only played 14 games, but he had 16.7 points per game. And again, to suck Michael Thomas's dick a little bit more, Chris Godwin was 2nd overall in total fantasy points among wide receivers. He had 67 less points than Michael Thomas. The person who had 67 less points than Chris Godwin, again, that's 1 to 2. That's the difference there, was Calvin Ridley, who was wide receiver 25. So that's how much Michael Thomas mattered in terms of just really making a difference in your fantasy lineup week to week relative to almost every other wide receiver. Getting back to Godwin, though, it's kind of wild that he finished as the number two receiver, given that he only had 121 targets. He was 17th among wide receivers in targets, and that's only a 22.2% target share. Again, Thomas had 33.2%, so 11% better. And then with Godwin also, he only had a 22.6% market share of air yards, so it's not even like he was getting targeted down the field that much more than he was just getting targeted straight up. He only had three games with double-digit targets, but he only had one game with less than six, and I think that's part of what did it so much for him, was just he was consistently between that 6 and 11 type of target situation. He had three games with single-digit points, but nine games with less than 15 fantasy points, but he did get nine touchdowns this year. So Chris Godwin, and it's difficult to take lessons for these two Bucs wide receivers into the next year, but Chris Godwin, a guy that I think with Tom Brady at the helm, we can really count on as someone who can be a top producer. Shrek, what's your opinion on him?
Yeah, I think I got a recording pop up. I think when it comes to Chris Godwin, obviously incredible performance when you look at the gap between number one and number two, and that speaks to Michael Thomas as much as it does to Chris Godwin and what he did in less games with Jameis Winston at the helm, regardless of how you feel there. Obviously, you put Tom Brady in charge here and things he becomes a more accurate passer, we'll say, I think, than Jameis was for the Bucs, which obviously can be a good thing. I think he has to regress down, I think, a little bit from where he was here in 2019 to 2020. I'm just looking here at a projection from, I don't know, Pro Football Focus. Relatively the same. They're looking about 8 touchdowns, 1,250 receiving yards. So again, I think he'll be fine. I think it's a little bit of a step back to reality versus the big jump we saw from 2018 to 2019 for Chris Godwin.
Yeah, it just seemed to be like, I don't know, I don't want to call it like an outlier performance, but it was just like, there's, because like Walsh, you remember hyping him up in the offseason, like a lot, like Chris Godwin.
Yeah. I loved him, and I didn't think that what he did was actually going to happen.
Right, and then he kind of pulls it off, and then you kind of step back, and it's just like, oh, well, holy shit. All right, this is very possible. And then it's kind of weird, because remember when we were talking on the earlier podcast this year, it was like fucking 2 weeks ago, with you, me, and Don, and we were talking about how Tom Brady coming to here kind of limits their, you know, kind of explosiveness. You were saying you had a problem with Tom Brady coming in. Do you see it as an issue? Like, is it detrimental to Chris Godwin's value? Because I remember you were saying, like, it kind of seemed like he was taking a hit with Tom Brady coming in.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, obviously, I think there's a downgrade from his 2019 season. But I've also sort of reconciled the things that you and Don rightly called me out on not being necessarily consistent with the logic in my head, where I wasn't on Tom Brady, and I was on Teddy Bridgewater,
and I didn't even mean to call you out on that aspect. I thought you had a good point with like the way Jameis plays football is so fucking different to the way Tom Brady plays football. And I think there was a lot to get from that, because the full thought.
Yeah. I do think that you can like look at Chris Godwin as a consistent guy going forward. Again, not second overall. And Chris Godwin definitely overachieved relative to expectation last year. But yeah, I think he can be a guy who, again, like low end wide receiver one is where I would be drafting him, I think, going into this year. Do you guys have anything else on Godwin, or should we move on to his counterpart who finished third in points per game?
No, let's talk about his counterpart.
All right, so we got Mike Evans at 15.3 points per game. He only played 13 of them. So, again, you know, a little bit smaller sample size, but all of these guys kind of are. Mike Evans, I think, is the most interesting of all of these guys that we're going to talk about, because God damn, was his range of outcomes wide. he really relied on spike weeks due to his usage. So he had a 35% market share of air yards for the Tampa Bay box. And for those who don't know, air yards is the depth of a target times the amount of targets. And that 35% was relative to a 23.8 target share. He was third in the NFL in air yards behind only Julio Jones and Devontae Parker. And again, that's even though he only played 13 games. His catch rate for that was low because, again, he was getting targeted down the field so much, but 56.8% catch rate just made his sort of variance a lot wider. And I'll get into that a little bit. So six games out of his 13, that's almost half, with single-digit fantasy points, including one just flat zero. And I think this was a game where he had the flu. I don't know. I could be wrong, but
I think he pulled up with a hammy in that game, or was that the fluke? I can't remember. There's lots of Mike Evans hammy games, so I could be confusing them.
I think it was a game where he came in with the flu, and maybe we're retrofitting that narrative, but I could be wrong on that. But so anyway, six games with single-digit fantasy points, including that 1-0. Also had three games with 30-plus fantasy points, including one 41-point game. His target totals for the 13 games that he played varied between two targets and 17 targets. And just to kind of, you know, look at the huge variance again that comes with a deep threat wide receiver, three games with five or fewer targets, five games with double digit targets, and then three other games with 15 or more targets. So
Jesus.
Mike Evans was really, and if you'll remember back to this year, I remember this because I had a coworker after week three asking me, should I bench Mike Evans? And I said, absolutely fucking not. And then the next week was one of his 30-point games. So it's one of those where if you're going to draft Mike Evans, you have to know that you are playing him every single week, even if he drops a zero for you, even if he gets two targets that week, that sort of thing. You just need to know that with Mike Evans. And then I think with Tom Brady, this just brings in a whole nother fucking variable that I have no idea how to deal with. But I don't know, Shrek, like looking at Mike Evans' year, how do you project that forward?
With confidence, you don't. He's the exact guy that keeps me up at night every single fucking night, because although consistency is Don's line, I typically play it safe on guys where I know what I'm getting, versus, you know, three games with five or fewer targets, five games with double digit targets, like all over the fucking map. And I don't know what I'm doing. You know, like you said, where your coworker was like, well, do I like bench him or play him? And he was like pitiful. And then he put up a 30-point game. Like, that's the shit nightmares are made of for me. And Mike Evans is a guy I'm going to own 0.0 shares of, because of that reason. I still think he ends up as a, you know, probably a top 15 wide receiver with Tom Brady. But I don't have any confidence in projecting that out. I think Chris Godwin is obviously the more likable guy, but I don't have confidence in what to tell you about Mike Evans.
Huh, that's interesting. All right. So let's say end of the second rolls around, early third, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans are both on the board. What do you do currently right now, Shrek, and it on April 10th?
On April 10th.
What is the move you make right now?
I would rather draft Chris Godwin than Mike Evans.
I would go Mike Evans.
Okay.
I just feel like Tom Brady's been craving like this number one wide receiver, and I feel like Evans is probably the best he's had in a while. And I think that's
the best deep throw receiver he's had since Moss.
I was gonna say that, and then I thought that was kind of gonna be like hyperbole, but you're probably
not hyperbole.
It's probably more factual than anything. You're right, Walsh. Thank you for saving me and saying it. But yeah, it's really, this is what he's wanted. He's got the great wide receiver core. I feel like Chris Godwin's going to be a nice outlet kind of guy, secondary for sure. As long as Mike Evans stays out there, I think he's going to have a phenomenal year. I think it's going to be way more consistent than Godwin. I think Godwin will blow up, and I think Mike Evans is kind of going to more level out into consistency.
See, I would be over on Godwin over Evans, but I do think that Evans is the best deep threat receiver he's had since Randy Moss. I don't know. I think it's like a weird situation. I also, as we were talking, I came up with this comparison in terms of Mike Evans for me. He's Isla Fisher from Wedding Crashers, where he's completely all over the fucking map. But then by the end of the season, you're like, I love you and I want to marry you.
That's very good.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
But yeah, Mike Evans, I thought was really one of the most interesting players that I looked at in all of this, because it was just, it's a fucking roller coaster ride with this guy. And like I said, I think after week three, my coworker was like, should I sit him? And I was like, absolutely do not sit him. He put up one of his 30-point games, and then in week five, he put up a fucking zero. Like that's what Mike Evans was, and that's what he kind of can I think, like, projects to continue to do. Also, an interesting tidbit, as I've been looking through a ton of receiver stats, catchable ball rate, average depth of target, like all of these sorts of things, the most comparable receiver that I've seen to Mike Evans has been Kenny Golladay. So I think Golladay kind of falls on the same sort of spectrum as Mike Evans, as just this insanely talented guy who will get you blow up games and will, you know, also maybe leave you heartbroken on some.
Dead on.
Sounds like Isla Fisher to me.
All right, let's move to number four. We had Julio Jones this year, and these last year are going to be a little bit boring, but they're guys who, you know, have been there forever. Julio Jones played 15 games. He basically had a Julio season, and he averaged 15.5 point PPR points per game. 157 targets, 99 catches, 1,394 yards, 6 touchdowns. Second in targets and yards, and story of Julio's career, just not enough touchdowns. I think it's been long enough where we can say that just Julio isn't a guy who's going to get those touchdowns. Am I off on that?
It's kind of fun too. Like when he scores a touchdown, like we all do a fucking rain dance and it's like this big celebration. Like I kind of appreciate it now.
But then there's always like one game a year where he just gets 3 touchdowns, like right off the bat. And it's like, oh fuck. Like this is the Julio game.
But actually, Julio is the dude that has like 1 touchdown and 300 yards in that game. And you're just like, wow, I appreciate all of this. But like, yeah, from like week 4 to what did he finally fucking scored like week 15. Like when he scored, you're just like, this is the greatest moment.
It's one of the most bizarre things that I've ever seen, because theoretically he should be such a red zone threat, but like the motherfucker's like going to be 31. Like at this point, we should just accept that he is what he is, right? Yeah.
The second we say that, he's going to become a touchdown monster. So I refuse to acknowledge that whatsoever.
2020 is the year of 14 touchdowns and just like...
And I always like, do you remember that game where it was like really foggy in Foxborough and it was the Falcons versus Patriots and they did like the Madden view and Falcons, mm-hmm. It was like the rematch of the Super Bowl. And they wound up getting blown out, the Falcons, but at the end it was like garbage time and Matt Ryan just threw a fade and it was like high pointed by Julio and he just ripped it away from Malcolm Butler. It was just like, dude, do this all the time. Every single play, do this, please.
And it's either just, he can't do it or it's the most like mystifying coaching decision of our lives. Like it's one of the two.
And I don't think we'll ever know the answer, but like I said, when he scores, like I love how it's a thing. Like everybody just freaks out. I love it. It's just great.
Yeah. So going back into his stats, he had no games with fewer than 7 targets. So his usage was very, very consistent. But his production wasn't necessarily that consistent. 5 single-digit fantasy point games, 5 from 10 points to 20, and then 5 above 20, which I guess might actually be considered consistent, where he just had the same amount of like those 3 sort of bands as everything. But I think really what it is just that Julio's a guy who is wildly consistent in his usage. We know what to expect from him, and I guess that'll change going into the further years where he gets older and older, but I don't know. I didn't have really anything interesting to say on Julio this one. Shrek, do you have anything in general? Or
he is who we thought he is. I mean, that's pretty much, I'll say it. I mean, that's it. That's Julio Jones. Like the touchdown thing is the Achilles heel. The rest of it is his consistency. and he's going to continue to do that. There's nothing sexy about the Julio Jones pick or the stats. I mean, it's just, you know, obviously frustrating when you have five single digit fantasy point games, but you know, I'll take 10 plus in 10 of the games. That's a win if you spend the points, particularly when we watch out how we whiff on some of these guys in early rounds. But nothing sexy unless the touchdown spike to 14, which for all we can hope it will, with the year it's been. Go ahead.
I think you're right in some of that, in that but what I mean in terms of you're right is that he's fallen to a point where he's like the first second round turn, right?
Yes.
So like, he's not necessarily the guy that we need that from right now. I think the expectations on Julio have gotten to where they sort of need to be, as opposed to like me at my height of Julio fanboydom was like, he's going to have 16 touchdowns and fucking 1700 yards. You
correct.
Know?
You still had the hope that like it could happen, but like we're realistically saying like six touchdowns and like what he's been doing is like what you're going to get. And like, we've now come to terms with the fact that like, you know, he's not a 10, you know, he's a 7. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah. Vin, you got anything else to add on Julio?
I was just thinking, it's completely realistic that you could have the most unsexiest team in the first two rounds and just take Zeke and Julio back to back, and you still have a very good fucking team.
You're right.
And so, here's the thing is, you probably wouldn't win because other people will have way higher spikes, but goddamn if you don't make the playoffs with that team.
Right. You'll probably be like the coolest dude in third or fourth. Like, you're just like very unsexy. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is. He's become a guy that it's like a mainstay in fantasy, a mainstay in football. And it's just like, you know what you're getting. And if he improves, hell yeah. If he kind of slacks off on touchdowns, it's to be expected. But he's going over 1,000. The dude's going to have a shitload of catches. He's still Julio.
Hoop Daddy's gone. Hayden Hurst can't do shit. Hoop Daddy, sorry. Julio's getting 16 touchdowns in 2020. It's happening.
If I set the line at 8.5 touchdowns, do you go over or under on Julio?
Under.
Yeah. Under.
Yeah. What can you do?
You're probably right.
All right.
Yards, though.
Yards? I mean, motherfuckers right there. Honestly, this doesn't have anything to do with fantasy production, but if you look at Julio's career over like the entirety of it.
His yardage is disgusting every single season.
It is.
Egregious.
It is like Calvin Johnson levels, and then Calvin Johnson retired at this point. So like anything Julio does over that is just like Julio historically, if you look at the entirety of his career, I think like several years past his retirement, we will remember him as like the debate between the top wide receivers right now is Rice and Moss. And I think Julio might get in there at some point. And if he doesn't get in there, then he probably deserves to get in there.
No, I completely agree. He's like Calvin Johnson, that kind of like, I'm not to take anything from Calvin Johnson, but like he's still playing. So he's just padding the stats. Not to say that's what he's playing for, but like, holy shit, dude. This dude is still a monster. He's like not the peak of his performance, but he's still not going away. And I think that he's still like the Falcons' top dude. Like, they're not anything without Julio.
Also, did you know that Calvin Johnson at this exact moment is 34 years old?
Wow. He can come back at any time.
That guy could come back and just like get like 1,200, maybe like 80 catches and 8 touchdowns.
Wow.
Easily. Any day of the goddamn week. And he retired, what, like 3-4 years ago? Oh, man.
He could do that shit on the Jets. Like, he could do anything.
like Kaepernick?
Oh, right, yeah. We forgot to breaking news that, Cap is on the Jets, and we wish them all the best. That's just a good signing.
Don is very stupid. Let's go to the fifth wide receiver in this in points per game. It was DeAndre Hopkins. He was at 14.5 points per game. He played in 15 of them, and this was interesting to me to really look at because he was used way different this past year. Like, I don't know. DeAndre felt bulletproof in past years to me. This year he didn't. His average depth of target was 10.2 in 2019. His previous entire career average depth of target was 12.7. It felt like he was like more of a downfield threat, more of a guy who the ball would get chucked up and he would just like muscle out a corner down the field and take one. Like, you know, that's obviously anecdotal, but five single digit fantasy point games this year, despite only one game below 8 targets. But he also had 0 games above 13 targets, which like Hopkins would make his hay on like fucking 17 target games just because he was there and the ball needed to be thrown somewhere. And despite the fact that the Texans had almost no other receiving talent because Fuller was hurt for a lot of the year, Stills was barely used, they benched Kiki Kuti for almost the entire year, Hopkins wasn't used in that same dominant role that I really thought this year. And I say that acknowledging that he had 151 targets for the year. So I think there's that. And then there's also the thing that we need to take in consideration, which he's on another fucking team. He's on the Arizona Cardinals now. And he is theoretically their lead wide receiver in an offense that we all love. Vin, you were laughing at that. I don't know. What do you make of Hopkins' past year? And then what do you make of him going forward?
So I watched literally every single Texans game down to the bone because I owned a stack in our main league of Watson and Hopkins. And it was pretty much beneficial throughout the season, but it was kind of on like the more unexciting level where like maybe Watson would pop one week. They wouldn't pop together. Like it was kind of weird because DeAndre Hopkins was playing like Michael Thomas, but not exactly blowing up or getting the insane target share that he was used to. So I remember like week 4 or 5, I got really mad at you all. She was like, do you regret drafting Hopkins? And I'm just like, not at all, dude. Because he was getting this floor, which I appreciated like for my games, but it was like, there was something missing. And I was just like, yeah, Walsh is right. But it kind of hit a nerve. I'm just like, I'm going to tell him to fuck off right now. Because I'm like, I don't want him to shove this in my face at all. So it was an interesting season. It was very – I think the Texans are just poorly run, poorly organized. That was a lot – I mean, you can obviously see that now from their offseason. But throughout the season, it was kind of prevalent when they're just – Deshaun Watson is getting killed. Hopkins is getting 7 targets instead of 10. It was just little tweaks like here and there. And it's just like, that could be changed. This is – it could be a lot better. Lo and behold, it doesn't even fucking matter anymore. He's on the Cardinals, like you said. So it made me laugh very hard because it's just like we can't even really take any of that information and move it over. But we can say that the Arizona Cardinals are I can't even say that they're worse than the Texans. I think they're better than the Texans considering the shit that they've done. And I think that Kyler Murray's going to have to chuck the ball around a lot more than they had to or just didn't let Watson do on the Texans. So I think the target share is going to bump up for Hopkins. I remember we were arguing about this too, Walsh. Has your opinion changed
at all? Bump up? Absolutely fucking not.
Again, I think it's going to go way up.
He had over a 30% target share. Only 2 wide receivers did that this past year, and it was Michael Thomas and DeAndre Hopkins. There's no fucking way he has more than a 30% target share on a team that runs a 4-wide thing and has Christian Kirk and fucking Larry Fitzgerald.
I'm like, telling you, dude. What was our bet? It was 150.
Kirk's target share is 70%.
It was 150 was our bet in terms of total targets for DeAndre Hopkins this year.
Easily.
This past year, with a plus 30% target share, he had 151. I know the Arizona Cardinals run more plays. DeAndre Hopkins' target ceiling this year to me is 135. That's where he lands.
I'm okay with that.
I'm also okay with that because it's going to be an efficient offense. And Shrek, I didn't mean to cut you off on anything, but
no, I was just, you know, really more in support of, you know, I've just kind of been looking at some of the stats of, you know, like you look at Christian Kirk. I mean, like he had again last year a target share of 17% of that offense. So even if Hopkins takes that full 17%, you know, just based on what, you know, I'm looking here at Pro Football Focus projects 550 passing attempts from the Cardinals, which is 21st in the league. So even if you project that out, I don't foresee, you know, him going over that 150.5, which is your guys' bet. I think 135 is closer, and he's probably a little bit below that 100 catch mark in 2020.
And for reference, DeAndre Hopkins, I don't think has gone below 150 targets in I want to say since like 2014. I'm looking it up right now. Yeah. So he had 150 this past year. The lowest amount he's had since then was 127 in 2014. Since then, he's had 192, 151, 174, 163, and 150. Like,
why do you think that's going to drop?
Because there's no way in the Cardinals offense that they're going to give him that much. He was the only guy forever, like in the Texans offense.
Will, I'm injured Fuller.
Do you remember the years of Brian Hoyer just chucking the fucking ball up and like finding
like he's
yeah,
he's
but they like, don't right. need to use him that
Christian
way.
Christian Kirk is very good. I like him as like a young guy, but like the with Hopkins coming in, he is absolutely their fucking focal point, 100%. Christian Kirk is great, but like then you have Larry Fitzgerald who's going to take a couple targets here and there. He knows where he's at in his career. He's totally fine with that. Larry Fitzgerald is that kind of fucking player. I don't see Christian Kirk. Like, are you guys super pumped up on Kirk that he's going to have like this amazing year secondary with like on a team with DeAndre Hopkins? Do you think he's going to suck that much away?
No, I just think there's enough because that offense wants to spread the ball around, right?
So do
I
they?
Think yes,
they want to play a spread offense, but that doesn't necessarily mean they want to distribute the ball like that, especially when you have DeAndre Hopkins now. Like last year, they had a rookie in Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald, and they had a couple burners here and there. And now you have DeAndre Hopkins, who is, like I was just saying, Michael Thomas is the best, but like DeAndre Hopkins is right there. And they go back and forth, I'm sure. But like now you have one of the best top two wide receivers in the league. You're going to get this guy the ball. And it's right. going to be over 150 times.
But 150 targets is something that only gets leveled by people who are like very much the number one on their team. And I don't know that like he's like that much of the number one on their team. Also, I don't know if they like, I don't know if they they prioritize getting him the ball over like the actual system of the offense, if that makes sense.
No.
We will agree to disagree on this one.
I'm excited. This is probably like the hottest thing we've been talking about. I'm actually like, oh, this season has to happen. Please, God. This is like so it's so exciting to see. Like,
yeah.
Hopkins, dude, has to do well.
On this the Cardinals offense is going to be one of the most interesting things in the league this year, obviously. Like Cliff Kingsbury's second year with Kyler Murray, and like there was high expectations for them going into it, but I think they exceeded them like to a certain extent.
Absolutely, man.
And they exceeded them with fucking Damir Bird and Trent Sherfield and Keyshawn Johnson on the outside.
Who?
And exactly. And now you've got fucking DeAndre there. So there's a lot to be excited about. Kenyon Drake's going to have a baller ass fucking year, but
agreed.
Yeah. This is the first time that LTFF is going to be high on Kenyon Drake.
Watch him do nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just can't see an offense. They're just like, especially Cliff with his fucking mindset that like they need to get the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know. It just seems like it's an inevitability that he's going to get targeted so much and go over the 150.
And I'm arguing against myself, but if you're Kyler Murray and you roll out of the pocket, because we know he has escapability.
You're like chucking it up to DeAndre Hopkins every time.
Even just in general, like if you get out of the pocket, you've got pressure. Like, I guess you could be looking for Larry Fitz because he's a safety net, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They have zero tight ends. They don't have that sort of safety net. And then otherwise, you're looking for Hopkins and you're being like, I got to get it into his hands.
It just seems like that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah. I mean, if I lose that bet, then good for you. And we'll kind of both be where we are there. But I think that kind of wraps up the top five wide receivers. Just for again, a little bit of context, a little bit of fun facts here. The other wide receivers where Hopkins was at 14.5 points per game, and again, half PPR. The other ones who were over 13 were Devontae Adams, who was hurt a lot of the year, Cooper Kupp, who was very up and down through most of the year. Kenny Golladay, who, again, earlier I compared to Evans. And then Tyreek Hill, Devontae Parker, who actually, in terms of the peripheral stats, the average depth of target, the catch rate, those sorts of things, he was actually very much in the Golladay-Evans category, which was I was a little surprised to see. But Devontae Parker last year was basically used as a deep threat the same way as Mike Evans and Kenny Golladay. So kind of interesting on that point. And then the last one was Keenan Allen, who was over 13 points per game. And I was very surprised at that one too, because he had a big stretch in the middle of the year where he fucking sucked. I think that does it for wide receivers, right? Are we good, guys?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
All right. Do you guys want to talk about the draft a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah, man.
Let's fucking do it. That's what we need, Wolf. This is our lifeblood right here.
All right. So Vin, obviously we got Joe Burrow going to you number one. And I'll again, a little bit of a preview on my catchable ball stats or whatever that I've been researching.
Yes, sir.
All four of the Bengals wide receivers who had over 50 targets, so that was Boyd, Ross, Erickson, and Tate, had under a 70% catchable ball rate.
Doesn't sound like my Andy.
And specifically for Boyd and Erickson, because catchable ball rate kind of correlates to average depth of target, right?
Mm-hmm.
So specifically for Erickson and Boyd, it was so far below what you would expect for them.
Especially on guys that do intermediate to short routes. Like
exactly. That's,
you got to get those guys the ball. And it was just, I don't know. Walsh, I can exclude you. I always have high expectations for the Bengals. So probably over.
I think, dude, if Burrow can come in and be a league average quarterback, say like, you know, 15th ranked starter this year, which I think is within reasonable expectation.
I think so too.
The Bengals receivers and Joe Mixon become so good immediately.
The team becomes, I am beyond excited. There are no words that I could say right now, especially once it becomes real, when they draft Joe Burrow, like it's just all going to take off from there. Very excited, but as we were saying on like the podcast before, like it's just, they have a very good offense. They have the pieces. Defense is getting better. It just seems like something that could work out. And I'm a fan of the team, but it's really the offensive line is the weak point, but very exciting stuff. And I haven't been this pumped on, the draft in a while, because they mainly get sniped taking linebackers by the Steelers, and it's happened for years. And it's just like, I'm ready for a change, I guess. Andy Dalton's ship has sailed. I love him forever, but it's Joe Burrow time.
And I mean, that's with the offensive line, Jonah Williams coming back, and also we didn't even mention AJ Green potentially coming back this year.
Oh, he's back.
I wasn't trying to like oversell anything, but like fucking if you've got Joe Burrow with like a competent offensive line, and then Joe Mixon, AJ Green, Tyler Boyd in the slot, John Ross running deep routes, like that's fucking really good. Am I like off base on that?
So this is going to sound maybe stupid, but does it kind of sound like the Cardinals offense where you have these awesome three wide receivers where it's like AJ Green is the Hopkins, you got John Ross and Tyler Boyd interchangeable as the Christian Kirk and the Larry Fitzgerald. Well, obviously you can't. I guess AJ Green would be more of the Larry Fitzgerald there, but you get my point.
But also the Hopkins at the same time. Yeah,
exactly. Like it's kind of like a hybrid there. You get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same built offense, and it's just very exciting to look at, and I cannot wait till it's just all kind of fit together.
Yeah, I don't want to get too high on it and make you too like pumped up on it, but I am
so high already. I have a problem. I can't even talk too loudly about AJ Green in my house anymore. Laura got me in trouble for, she was like, you were really jerking off to AJ Green on the last podcast. I'm just like, it's fine. I've been doing it for years.
Yeah, what I mean, if she's not used to that after dating you for 10 years, then what is she used to? But
me hiding a fathead in one of our rooms.
I think the other questions are around that or after that. Like, so let's do a little quarterback, right?
Sure.
Do you think the Dolphins are going to take Tua?
Bit of a hot take here. I think Redskins dive in.
No way. Over Chase Young, and they're going to say, fuck Dwayne Haskins? And is it definitely Tua over Herbert there?
Yes, definitely Tua. And I think, like, it's kind of lost my train of thought there. But I think, like, like, when they're getting rid of, like, kind of just saying goodbye to Haskins, it's kind of like the Josh Rosen thing. Like, whatever, we can take a dude. Like, you know how the Cardinals took oh, my God, dude. I'm fucking off the rails.
They took Kyler. Yeah.
I'm so high off the thing. I told you, dude.
Then they immediately traded Rosen to the
Dolphins. Yeah, like it's not out of the realm of possibility where that could be something that happens.
So who are the Dolphins that pick up Dwayne Haskins? Is it the Giants? No. Is it the Jets, maybe?
Possibly.
No, Jaguars? That's super interesting. Yeah, I had no even concern of that.
I mean, I read from Walter Football today about the Chargers trading up to 3 to take Tua.
That would be interesting as well. And that I think I would be very surprised if the Chargers leave the first without a quarterback, just because I know they say they're comfortable with Tyrod right now, but like if the Chargers aren't starting the season with one of either, you know, Tua or Justin Herbert or Cam after signing him, like, on their roster, I would be really surprised.
I agree.
So it's one of those, and I don't know how you guys feel about Tua versus Herbert, that sort of thing.
But you sound like you're on the Herbert side.
Yeah, I'm a Tua guy, but
I'm very much a Tua person.
I am also a Tua guy, but I think the Tua injury history is concerning.
He did fail 2 physicals with 2 anonymous teams, by the way. I don't know if those teams were clarified, but I did see that on the internet, so it is true.
I think that might be like lying type of stuff. And I also think that this is why I think Tua is going to be a Dolphin, is because the Dolphins front office, the Dolphins front office has been throwing out a lot of feelers that they don't like Tua. And me in my head is just like, that means you like Tua, you fucking scumbag bitches. You
know? Wait, so they're just being like a fourth grade boy that likes a girl. And it's don't like her.
They punch her and then they go, I don't like her. You know, it's one of those. So that's why I think the Dolphins are going to end up with Tua. And I would be very happy if it's Patrick Mentor's Tua for a season. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's interesting. Herbert, I think, might end up with the Chargers, but I'm really not sure. And then, like, past that, I really have no idea in terms of quarterbacks. I don't know. Do you guys have any other strong thoughts on, like, the quarterbacks past those three, or where you think Tua or Herbert might end up? Or
yeah, I can't. Are you saying, like, if Tua doesn't go to one of the top three teams, like, where would he go?
Yeah.
Fuck.
I think unless the Dolphins, I think between,
there's so much fallout from.
Yeah, that. I mean, I think it's like you said, between the Dolphins and, I mean, Burrow's going, but like between the Dolphins and the Chargers, I think it's one ends up with Tua, one ends up with Herbert. I don't think it's a. Oh, man. Cam is a fun alternative to San Diego. I think they still end up with someone here in the draft, and maybe if they still want to roll a dice there, but I don't think they do. I think they leave with the draft with somebody here.
Yeah. For me, I think most likely scenario is Burrow obviously won to Cincinnati.
Yep.
I think Tua goes to the Dolphins, and then I think Herbert ends up in San Diego backing up Tyrod for probably about 8 games, at which point he gets thrust into the
poor Tyrod.
Depending on how much faith you have in Tyrod. I know I used to have a lot. I don't know how much faith I have in like 34-year-old Tyrod, which I think he currently is. So
he's 34?
I don't know if it's that late. I might have been making that
up. I'll look that up real quick while I ask you this question, Walsh.
Yes.
So since you're so confident that
30.
That who's 30. Okay, that's not bad at all.
Wait, really?
Yeah, like I figured he was younger than that.
All right, I will definitely fuck off on that one. That's my fault.
Still, I get your point. And well, basically what I wanted to ask you is, what do you think the Lions and Giants do in between all this?
So I think both of them, well, the Lions, I think, have a reason to build for the future, but I would think they should be taking a quarterback in later rounds because you still have Stafford for another year. And Stafford, I have hot takes on Stafford. Stafford balled the fuck out in 8 games last year.
He was so, so good.
I've already said on Twitter, I'm planting my flags on Baker and Stafford as the 2 late round quarterbacks that you should be taking this year. Stafford, I think, still rules. I think Stafford can still sling the pig downfield, all of that. And then the other one was the Giants. I think the Giants giving up on Daniel Jones would be like fucking insane at this point. Yeah. So there's just, and like the Giants also are such like not a good organization that they have enough holes elsewhere. Like, you take Jeff Okuda if you're the Giants and you're fine. Like, you take a cornerback, that's cool. You take a defensive end, that's cool. There's a lot of offensive linemen early in this draft. The Giants definitely need those if they want to protect Daniel Jones.
Oh yeah.
Like, you take Tristan Wirfs at offensive tackle. Like, that's fine. You do those sorts of things.
There's just so much room for fuckery from those two teams that I think that like the Dolphins or Chargers are going to, you know, fight each other to bump up, because I feel like they're going to have to make the move for quarterback, like you were saying.
Yeah, and that's why I think the Dolphins are spreading the rumor that they don't like Tua, I think, is because they're trying to, like, plant a seed of, like, we don't want to have to, like, make any moves with anyone. Like, that sort of thing. They don't want the Chargers to trade up to 2 in order to get Tua.
Tua.
That right. sort of thing. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Let's talk about these wide receivers a little bit, because the wide receiver, again, I don't watch any of the film. Like, I don't really know that much about like all of this, but the wide receiver class is supposedly like one of the deepest and like best wide receiver classes of all time. So at the very top, we've got guys like CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, and then Henry Ruggs. I don't know about you, Shrek, but like, I'm looking at the Raiders' number 12 pick, and if I don't come out of that with either CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, I will be very, very upset.
I'd be super pumped. I mean, I think Judy's good character is probably too much for the Raiders. I just don't think he's a good fit there, society-wise. you have to, right? I mean, you should. You should leave the draft there with an elite wide receiver. And if you don't, I'm excited as a Kansas City Chiefs fan. I feel for you as a Raiders fan if you don't, but you should. That's the right pick. It's a good move for the team. I like Jeudy, I think, a hair more, but I think it's preference at that point. They're both great wide receivers.
Yeah, and I know Henry Ruggs is the other guy in that discussion, and Henry Ruggs is like he's a Tyreek Hill type, where he's like a speedster, but he's also got some other good characteristics, that sort of thing. So,
and he could end up in the division with the Broncos at 15. I mean,
that's the thing is, I think that's that range right there, and the Raiders aren't necessarily the start of it, but yep. Like, you've got like 12 to the Raiders, 13 to the Niners. I think both of those should be wide receivers.
Correct.
15 to the Broncos probably should also be a wide receiver.
Yep.
So you've got 3 off the board right there. And then like, you're kind of rolling from there. But in general, and again, this is me coming at it from a Raiders fan.
Sure.
Perspective where the Raiders have 2 first round picks, and then they have another in the third. And I think they actually have 2 other thirds. And if they don't leave those first 3 rounds with 2 wide receivers, just because of how deep this class is, and we don't have to get into every wide receiver, just because of how deep these wide receiver classes are, like, I'm going to be very upset. And one of the reasons also, I'll go behind the curtain a little bit. Jerry Jeudy, I really, really hope he becomes a Raider, because I can buy my mom, my mom's first name is Jeudy, yep. And I can buy her a Raiders like shirt jersey that says Jeudy on the back of it. And I
think
that would be really cool, right? Like, that would be fun.
Love it.
But also because he's fucking great. So it's like, if we end up with either him or CeeDee Lamb at 12, I'll be very happy. I know like Henry Ruggs is such like a huge prospect in terms of that. Like, I don't want one of those all or nothing burners, because there's been so many of those guys who have been misses. I mean, if you want to go back in Raiders history, Darius Hayward Bay would be a nice example of that. And I'm not saying that's what Henry Ruggs is, but yeah, I feel like this wide receiver draft, it's super deep. You've got a couple of guys who are really good, maybe not the best receivers of all time, but really, really good at the top of it in terms of Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb. Yep. And then you've got some interesting names the rest of the way, to where there's going to be a lot of contributors from this rookie class next year.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of excitement, a lot of things to, like you said, see how they shake out. I mean, again, in that range there, 13 to 15, or you know, give or take, you should see these wide receivers kind of, you know, come off the board, but in what order? Like you said, it becomes interesting on who do the Raiders prefer, who do they not? You know, do the Eagles roll with a wide receiver? I'm trying to remember, are they before or after you guys later in the first round? They're after you, 21. Mm-hmm. So Justin Jefferson, obviously on the board out of LSU, you know, as a potential option there. Obviously, you guys could go a different direction, but I think Judy's the right fit for you. Personally, I hope you don't get him, but I do think it will be a good thing for the Raiders.
I'm already like prepping myself mentally for both Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb to be there on the board for the Raiders at 12, and for them to take neither of them. just for my own mental health, I need to be aware of that possibility. So if and when it happens, I won't want to you know, dive out of my front window without a mask to prevent the COVID-19 from.
Well, Walsh, we know that Davis family is a big supporter of the podcast, so I'm sure they're listening in. Guys, we don't want Walsh to go off the deep end. As we said before, he is the best thing we've got going. So we don't need him to dive off the balcony. So Jeudy may be the pick. But
yeah, I mean, other than that, we've got a couple interesting running back prospects. I don't think any are really going to go in the first round, so we'll see. It'll be interesting. I think a lot of the running back prospect game sort of depends on where they end up. Guys like DeAndre Swift, guys like Jonathan Taylor, guys like J.K. Dobbins, Zach Boggs, like those sorts of things. So I think after the draft itself, we'll probably get in on the landing spots and try and fill you guys in terms of how they fit in the various offenses, but it's not really our strong suit to say where these specific guys should be or try and mark them before they actually land.
Yeah, we're better on the analysis side after the fact. Let them land and we'll dive in a little bit deeper and hopefully we can get another episode out before the draft, maybe talk about some QBs, tight ends, and non-specialty kickers for the people to look at these top five guys in each spot.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, sounds like a great plan.
Well, guys, it has been an absolute pleasure. We're excited for the NFL draft. Hopefully we'll be back before that. Walsh, you killed it as always with some of the deep dives here on these guys. And we look forward to coming back, hopefully having the DON for kickers in the next episode. Guys, you have anything else for the people?
Stay safe. Sorry. That's all I got.
That's good. That's perfectly good, Walsh. Guys, stay safe, stay healthy, take care of those that need it, and that's about it. For Walsh, Vinny, and Let's Talk Fantasy Football, I am Nick Schreck. We will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Let's Talk Fantasy Football. Thanks for listening.